This episode is brought to you by Rockstar Energy Drink. Be honest, are you procrastinating by listening to this podcast? It's okay. You just need Rockstar Focus. Choose from three delicious flavors, each crafted with ingredients for an ideal energy and mental boost, like Lion's Mane, 200 milligrams of caffeine, and zero sugar. Visit rockstarenergy.com to learn more. At least 75 milligrams of caffeine has been shown to help improve attention.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
Welcome to Who Are You Wearing, the podcast that asks people about their clothes, but not in a weird way. I'm your host, Kiri Pritchard-McLean, and I think clothes are how we tell the world about ourselves. So each episode, I sit down and ask an icon what they're trying to tell us. Episode 5 of Series 3 is with one of my principal Instagram crushes, Triple Minor, also known as Georgie. Georgie actually explains the moniker Triple Minor during this episode. Whoa, it's a stunning example of ownership of their often dangerous lived experience. It's an amazing story. Now, Georgie talks beautifully about growing up with a sense of style and reconciling that with a cultural expectation of how you should show up sartorially and in terms of gender. Also, another teenage emo. Listen, guys, if you're only listening to this for the first time, I have a theory that everyone incredibly well dressed as an adult was a teenage emo or goth, and Triple Minor is backing me up on that. This episode was recorded on Valentine's Day 2023. Triple Minor was at home just outside of London, and I was in my trusty cupboard in North Wales. We talk a lot about gender in this episode, and Georgie is funny, insightful, and really generous on the subject. We also talk about colorism, racial fetishes, transphobia, and homophobia. Also, guys, if you love colonialism, this isn't the episode for you. But also, if you love it, I doubt much of my output is. This is a fascinating chat with an important and gorgeous human. Please enjoy me asking Triple Minor, who are you wearing?
I was fortunate enough to come from a home where my mom had a certain view of the world and how you should present yourself. You know, we always had to look formal and tidy and always dress correctly for the right occasion. We used to have house clothes. Those never left the front door or gate or whatever. You wore them around the house to mess about and not ruin, and it didn't matter if they got ruined. And then you had semi-casual clothes, which meant that you could go to the supermarket in there, maybe go visit some auntie around the corner in there, and you looked presentable, but they were not so flashy. And then you had your formals, which usually ended up in church or at occasions and stuff. And that grounded how I perceived fashion. Even now, to some extent, I still hear my mum in my head, you know, probably saying you shouldn't be wearing that to this place. And then the second thing that really structured my fashion overall as a person was there was an event, and in African events, usually people would have like a special fabric that they would pick, and everybody would use that same fabric to create something unique to them, but it kind of creates a uniformity at that event. And there was a fabric, and my mom allowed me to draw on paper exactly what I wanted to be made out of that fabric. And it gave me design choice, style choice. And I remember I'd seen people like Steve Harvey, and they used to wear these long, what I call pimp coats, almost like zoot suits, you know, and they will come all the way down. And I wanted something like that, but I didn't want mine to have buttons down the front. I wanted mine to have buttons down the side and a giant lapel and a wide collar. And I drew that, and my mom allowed that to be made for me. And it gave me a taste of the freedom that came with style, the freedom that came with fashion, the opportunity to be myself in a space where, even though everybody was wearing the same fabric, I knew I was unique. I didn't just wear a shirt and trouser version of that fabric that every dad and every cousin had. No, there I was with a wide lapel, buttons down the side, trousers of the same fabric, wide legged. And I just felt like, you can't touch me. And that defined how I saw myself as a child to an adolescent in fashion. I knew there were rules, but I also learned very quickly, and I'm grateful that I did, that at an early age, I could break those rules and create what was uniquely me.
Do you remember what age you were with
that? I think I was about 15, 16. So I was just at that ripe age where everything was impactful without me necessarily knowing. Here's the thing. When you grow up in an African household, it doesn't matter where that African household is, you know, life is structured around certain things and there is expectations of you. But to have those rare opportunities where, rather than somebody picking it and saying, this is what you should wear, at an age where you start to be a little bit defiant or start to crave your own identity, I was given that small opportunity to really look into my identity and how I wanted to present it. And it was very impactful because it gave me an opportunity to be, rather than worry about being like everybody else. I knew I was going to just be me in that moment.
So did you have, as a kid then, did you have a strong sense of style? Were you like picking outfits out for yourself? Were you even, or was that, you know, decided for you? Or you're working in what given to you by family members? Like, how did it work?
Okay, it worked two ways. So generally my mom and my parents were in charge of whatever you got. You got what you were given and that's what it was. Looking back, I am grateful my mom had a certain sense of style that was hard to rival. So I grew up in a family where my aunties had a sense of style. My grandparents had a sense of style. They were very formal British, you know, they almost mimicked, you know, like what they expected to see from the royal family or something of that nature. Everything was sort of, when it had to be formal, it was formal. You wore a three-piece suit and a shirt. And, you know, even if it was bloody hot, you had to be in there. So they defined what I wore. But in and amongst that, thinking about it now, I made small choices that allowed me to make that thing mine, per se. So instead of saying wearing a white shirt, I used to prefer striped shirts. And very quickly, you know, instead of fighting with you in the supermarket or wherever you went to get those pieces, very quickly they would say, okay, you have a blue double-breasted suit and some, my mom used to love French suits. So you have a gray pants, and then she'll be like, you can wear this white shirt or you can wear this striped shirt. And it gave me the opportunity to make those little choices that were mine. Obviously, she wouldn't let me pick something that she didn't pre-approve. But giving me that choice allowed me to be able to be stylish in my own right. That's the kind of home I came from. You have to turn up, Uber dress, stay formal, be polite, say yes, thank you. Everybody was an auntie and an uncle, and you were never rude. But even in those moments, I didn't have to worry about what I was wearing because I chose it.
Even though your mum, with her great eye, by the sounds of it, is sort of making the big decisions, you are kind of working collaboratively. So you enjoying what you wear, yes, even as a young person.
There were moments where she would say, you have to wear this. And you said, no. And she said, what did you say to me?
And you, were you ever put in anything you hated?
There were obviously things that I probably didn't want to wear in those moments, but there were. It was just me being an average kid. I think in the grand scheme of things, I used to think to myself, like, did I ever want to not wear, say, trousers or suits because I didn't really feel like they were aligned with who I am? No, I don't think I ever saw that as a problem because as a kid, we were pretty indoctrinated in the concept of this is what you're told and this is what you do. And even as an adult, for so long, I lived my life as a boy per se, and I wore what boys wore. Even if I wore it with a twist, so I would wear skinny jeans, but I would not buy the skinny jeans from the boys section. I went and bought the skinny jeans from the girls section. One, they were easier to get on. They usually had way more elastin in them. They could stretch a little bit better. I quickly found myself making those small choices, but that still allowed me to present somewhat as what people would technically consider a boy and not even realize that I am making small choices that change how I feel in the clothes, not how I look in the clothes, because I didn't care what people thought about it. It's how I felt in it. So as a kid, I don't think I rebelled on that level. I think it's just as I grew up and I started to understand, we do not have to conform to this binary concept of here's a dress that's women's wear and here's a dress, something that's particularly men's wear. Also, looking back, in the African culture, there was a lot of crossover in clothing that people try and pretend as if it's not there, but we all know it's there. You know, the outfit of choice that is considered the tribal outfit is a loincloth and a white shirt. So if I had a skirt and I had a, and they usually put a scarf over the shirt. So if I had a long skirt that was to the floor, make it floral just to match the loin cloth, had a white shirt like a Carolina Herrera moment, you know, and I put a nice, lovely wide belt on it that could represent a scarf, I'm still wearing the same thing they're wearing. But in that moment, somebody might look at me, even though they're dressed exactly that like me, they may want to distinguish themselves in that moment. There is a lot of full-length gowns, long-sleeve full-length gowns that have been tailored specifically to make it men's wear. But the reality is they're no different from my slip mumu. And it is not uncommon if you went to visit a friend at their home at 7 o'clock in the evening down Woolwich Way, to come into their home and find their dad sitting in the living room after he'd been done with work with a can of Stella in his hand, wearing my slip nighty mumu just in a plain color because, you know, it was menswear. But, you know, danchikis and sleeveless gowns and stuff, they are very much a part of everyday menswear within the African culture. You know?
It's so interesting, isn't it? And you wonder, like, because I know so much of gender binary and lots of other evil things is literally a result of colonialism, and you wonder how much of that in terms of what, and this is what women wear and this is what men wear, and you wonder how much of that is actually imported from colonialism.
Almost all of it is imported. You know, people had to tailor their, even the traditional wear. I kind of have a feeling that if we dig further back, you know, they made the choices that were probably in line with what the colonial master wanted them to make those choices, you know, especially the ones that went over there and imported their concepts. You know, there are lots of cultures within which we find that the concept of male and female is moot. You know, they didn't really have it or they looked at it from a different perspective until hardline concepts like Christianity come along, and then they say, oh no, you can't do this. This makes you uncivilized, and to be civilized, you have to take upon this concept. No. No.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
At the UPS Store, we know things can get busy this upcoming holiday. You can count on us to be open and ready to help with any packing and shipping or anything else you might need.
Is there anything you can't do?
Actually, I don't have a good singing voice. The UPS... Nope. But our certified packing experts can pack and ship just about anything.
At least that's good.
The UPS Store. Be unstoppable. Most locations are independently owned. Product, services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. Come in today to get your holiday goodies there on time.
When you're growing up there, then when you're a kid, young person, was there an item of clothing or an outfit that you loved that you just never wanted to take off?
I think I was a shoe person when I was growing up, and I think it's probably more in line with, I remember I had these brogues that came from Marks and Spencer's, so St. Michael brogues, and I would love to, when we came back, I wouldn't want to take my shoes off because I just love paddling in them, and they just made me feel so comfortable. I think the thing I loved about them the most now, reflecting as an adult and trying to put myself in that moment, they had a decent heel on them.
And one you could hear when you walked,
that's
right?
That's the thing. They had this wooden block, you know, the good old St. Michael's things used to be made to last 17 centuries. And they had this lovely, thick, blocked heel. And when you walked, I sounded like my mom or my sister clunking around. And it made that noise. And I think that's what I loved about it the most.
It's quite a powerful thing, that, because it's very much like, I'm arriving. You can all hear me coming. When you were growing up, as a teen in particular, what were the big trends fashion-wise? And were you someone who was experimenting with the trends, or were you keeping away from them, or were you interpreting them in your own way?
So, as a teenager, especially in my later teens, I experimented very heavily with the trends. And the trends back then was, it was early 2000s, and where I was in life, my world was just catching up with the late 90s. Mm-hmm. We were still loving it. It was still being perceived, seen on music videos, the baggy pants, the Timberland boots, the American style baseball jersey shirt with the big writings on the back. And I think for a long time, so from my late teens up till I was about 20, I found that I went from wearing them because everybody was wearing them to wearing them because I wanted to fit in. I'd just started to discover my sexuality, and I'd always been effeminate anyway, to the point where, sad, but to the point where some of the kids in my school decided my name was not good enough to be my name. They had to rename me with a girl's name, Sophie, because I was too effeminate to have a boy's name, George. Oh, so they started to call me Sophie. And I think for a period of time, I carried on wearing these garments, not necessarily because I even enjoyed them anymore, because I wasn't a big fan of big clunky Timberland boots. You know, I probably wanted to wear loafer slippers and, you know, slim things that made me feel a little bit dainty, a little bit more. But as a more effeminate man, for lack of a better expression, I carried on wearing them just to fit in more, so people would not clock me or see me walking down the street and just by what I'm wearing instantly just judge me and say, oh, you're gay. Plus, we went to the Afro-Caribbean clubs, and these spaces were spaces of toxicity, for lack of a better expression. And the more you could fit in, the more fun you could have, and then just disappear with your friends without necessarily getting, you know, gay bashed or singled out. So for a long time, you know, I wore those things because they were the right uniform for me to wear so that I could blend in, you know. And then when I stopped blending in, I it was just starting to be around that early 2000s where emo fashion, for lack of a better descriptor, was becoming more mainstream fashion. So you could walk into, it was around what, up to about 2000, you could go into Blue Banana or you could walk into Topshop and you could buy drain pipes, as they called them back then. They were not called skinny jeans, they were called drain pipes. And you could buy a pair of drain pipes, but rather than buying the black drain pipes, because I didn't want anybody to push me to one extreme and say, oh, you're very emo, and which was sort of frowned upon within the community because they were not necessarily, people didn't understand, I would go buy the gray version, and I would still get a lot of, and I wear them with Converse. But for a black person, I was way left field. I was on the other end of things because people were still enjoying and wearing the uniform of Timberlands and baggy jeans, and you know, and hip hop culture was defining fashion from America all the way over here. And I was completely on the other end of the spectrum. I'd grown my hair. People used to get cornrows and stuff, and that was normal, but I used to actually straighten my hair. So it looked sort of what it looks like now. And I looked very different from the average black kid. And I started to stop being so afraid, because I felt like I'd grown some muscles, I'd grown a broad chest. I felt like I could hold my own 97% of the time. So I started to allow myself, not necessarily to follow the trend, but to dress as me as I saw me at the time.
It's so interesting that that evolution starts with you sort of like just assimilating and passing, basically, for a safety. And then as you're sort of finding confidence, I guess, in yourself. But then that confidence is coming from a security of like, I'm less likely to get beaten up. It's not that, oh, society's understanding. But it's so interesting that you're taking your sense of style, what's speaking to you, that emo thing. But I'm so interested that you're... journey with it is trying to, sounds like, compromise with your community, and you're trying to be yourself but still kind of, is it as a result of respecting the community and the boundaries, or is it that actually it's just an easier life and then I can have more fun if I'm not getting shit from people?
See, that's an interesting one, because I think now I would say it was a little bit of both. So when you grow up in certain communities, especially one where community is key, you know, you want to belong. And there is an ease that comes when you belong. You know, you have, there's almost safety in numbers. But I think after a while, I started to realize that the community would quickly reject you once it's 17 boxes to tick to be part of the community. If you didn't, if you tick 16 and one was off, you were very quickly shunned. And I was very quickly shunned from my community with the advent of the internet and, you know, the bravery of youth wanting to go out clubbing. You know, where I lived at the time, there was one lonely gay club, and it was sort of out of the way. But if you walked down that path going there or coming back from there, everybody sort of clicked in that that's where you were going. And the second somebody within the community saw me coming from there and going there a couple of times with a bunch of other guys who were at my uni at the time, they very quickly put 1 + 1, and very quickly I was outed. And people that were part of the community that were my everyday would open their door, look at me, and find a reason to tell me not to come in. And you very quickly realize you don't belong. And when you go down the road of trying to go towards the LGBTQ community, even now, but at the time, there was less people who looked like me, you know, and so there was less camaraderie. You know, a lot of the time, the community, especially when you found it socially, was more interested in, you know, a quick meet, for lack of a better descriptor, than they were in actually getting to know you. You were more of an experimental product. You know, they wanted to sleep with a person of color, and there you were. And so you didn't belong here in the LGBTQ community. You didn't belong, especially when you're in a small town where everybody knows everybody. And you didn't belong in your community based on ethnicity and all that, because you were scared. You were never sure. Once as you get outed, you're not sure who's going to be the person that would accept you, and who's going to be the person that, if you met them in the wrong corner, would be the one to bash your head in. Same over here.
Yeah.
You know, so you then start to determine life on your own terms. And as part of determining life on my own terms, I chose a style that, if I'm going to be the radical, I'm going to be the radical. You know, I was not necessarily in the emo community because I dressed like them, but I wasn't in the black community because I didn't dress like them either. So fashion wise, I was just my own very unique potato rolling up and down, going to uni and coming back and trying to exist within these societies. And no matter what corner you turned, you know, people would look at you because you were so different from everything and you were so unique in your own perspective to how you chose to present. Now, even now, if I step out in a little skirt, it doesn't even faze me anymore because I'm so used to people staring. I started getting stared at as a child because I had a facial formation that was different from everybody else. I had the eye, and then you had from kids looking to adults looking. So people staring at me has never been a thing. But the bravery to allow them to stare was the thing I had to get over, if that makes any sense.
I guess having some ownership over them staring, be like, oh, I've chosen for you to look at me. This is a choice I'm making.
Yeah, which is why you then become the wild card, because it's like, if you're going to look, I'm going to give you a reason to look. If you're
going to reject me, I'm going to give you a show.
Yeah, exactly. And then there comes that bravery that comes with it, where you stop worrying at some point and you just start living. Because if you want to spend your whole life worrying about what they think, it will cripple you. And I still, as an adult, have moments where it does cripple me. But then when people bombard you one too many times with this pressure of how they want to see you, you know, you're only human. And the day that the walls are not as solid as they should be, you know, that pressure pushes back and then you crumble a little bit. And then it takes a little moment for you to breathe.
It's really interesting what you're saying as well, in terms of, it echoes the sentiment a lot of my friends who are people of colour and queer, that you're kind of taught that, like, a lot of them have had difficulty with their sort of community. Community means love, but they were taught that, like, oh no, we'll only love you if you abide by certain things.
Yeah, and you have to tick all the boxes.
Yeah, exactly. And then they go, oh great, well, there's this thing called the queer community that I'm a part of that will accept whoever. And then actually no, when you're a person of colour, that, like, all the rules of white supremacy still apply. And then that's this, which is why there's so many, it's so vital to have sort of queer spaces dedicated to people of colour as well, because the journey is so different. And often my friends have said that, like, oh, the homophobia has been just as bad in gay bars as it's been in, you know, straight clubs. And that's so sad to me.
It's one of those things where it's tricky, and we all live in a space where people want to assume that everybody's hurt. We're all hurt, but we're not all hurt equally. You know, our journeys are all individual. Like anything in this world, our journeys are all individual. And I chose the name Triple Minor because it represents something very specific. At any one point in time, no matter what I'm doing, 99% of the time, I am a minority in a space. Whether it's sexuality based, gender based, whether it's the color of my skin, disability. Myself, I usually say I wake up first thing in the morning and I'm a black, gender non-binary, disabled person. And at that moment in time, me just waking up, putting my 2 feet on the ground and taking a deep breath in to start the day, I'm already 3 minorities. So that's why I started using the name Triple Minor, because when you're constantly the minority, when you're constantly the marginalized person, life is hard. Not necessarily, oh, woe is me, life is hard, but you have to navigate things with sometimes a lot of delicacy, sometimes a lot of strain, a lot of stress, you know. And in those moments, even coming down to what you choose to wear can make all the difference, you know, as to how people will perceive you and treat you. So you find yourself navigating fashion sometimes, and most of the time, very differently from the average person who would just turn up as themselves. I can't always turn up as myself. I do it now more times than I want to, and I do it more times now than I'm safe to, but it's that difficulty where, generally as queer people, but as queer people of color, and you keep putting the minority labels on it, you have to choose between presenting as yourself and your safety. You know, it's like women. You have to be a woman and you have to think about your safety. Why can't you just, the two of them, just marry comfortably and you just go about your business on a day-to-day basis? There's this lovely joke by Wanda Sykes where she said, you know, I wish sometimes I could just take the parts that make me a woman, put it in a box, leave it on top of the refrigerator, and then go out. So that when people try to bother me while I'm out, I'll be like, fresh out. I ain't got nothing for you to bother me about, because I left everything that you want to judge me on top of the counter fridge. I'm so sorry. There's nothing for you to do with this. You know, and there were times where I wish I could take the elements of myself and find a mental space enough to just put them in a box and leave them at home. But the more I am myself, the more happy I am. And why shouldn't this happy person stroll down to Asda and just buy stuff? Why do I need to think, ooh, maybe I need to wear this different thing, or maybe I need to put this different thing on, or adjust in this manner? So that when I'm down in Asda, nobody's going to walk up to me and say, excuse me, are you a boy or a girl? How's it your business, bitch?
This episode is brought to you by the Weather Channel. It's suggested that brands avoid using sound effects in podcast ads. And remember to speak in a chill tone. Well, here's a suggestion for everyday life. Tap into the Weather Channel app. It's loaded with insights that help you manage your allergies, breathe easy, and
use your outside voice.
What in the weather are you waiting for? Be a force of nature with the Weather Channel app.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The style that I associate you with, which is like very glamorous, very put together, very experimental. The clothes are clothes. Clothes don't have a gender. It's whatever makes you feel good. Putting unconventional things together and great shapes together. That style. When did that start appearing?
That started appearing 2 years ago. So 2 years ago, I woke up one day and I said, I want to wear a skirt. And I remember saying to Darren, I want to wear a skirt. And their response was so instrumental to me being me. And they said, then buy one. It wasn't why or how or when. They said, then buy one. And then we went to TK Maxx a couple of weeks later and we're just looking through. I was like, let me just look through the sale rack on the women's section. And they were swiping and swiping and he was swiping and swiping. And then he went, what do you think of this? It was a little pinafore dress and it was £2.50 on the sale rack and he bought it for me. And
yes,
that was my first dress and I came in and I wore it. Now, I've always had a sense of what I thought great style should be, no matter who's wearing it. And it's very influenced by the powerful people who have been and who are in my life. So my mom, I've spoken about her, my aunt, my mom's sister, my late sister. Now, those three women are late. They've all gone before me, but they left with me a strong sense of who I am and a strong sense of style that it was representative of who they were and how they chose to present. And it impacted who I am and how I choose to present. I have two ways of approaching things now. If it's youthful, I'll normally go, would my sister wear this? and it keeps it youthful and fun for me. But sometimes if I want to glam it up and, you know, dress my age, you know, I would say, would my mother have worn this? Or would my mother wear this? Or would my auntie wear this? You know, I have to keep who I am as an honor to me. Who I am and who I'm becoming is an honorable extension of who they were. And in those moments, I have to keep it semi-modest. In those moments, I have to keep it respectable. In those moments, I have to keep it high glam because they would not have been caught dead looking wrong. You know, in those moments, all those things that you've explained as to what makes my style has been guided loosely and looser and looser as we go because I am also finding who I am. But the starting point, you know, was always, would this make them proud? Would they have won this? Would they do this? What's going on? So that's how my style has evolved, or that's where it started from. I'm starting to find my own sense of self, my own true, okay, this is Georgie or this is triple minor within these parameters. So over the last 6 months or so, thereabouts, the skirts went up just a half an inch, 20. You know, but also I did a couple of shows. I shot a TV show, which is coming out soon. Look for that. But it gave me a little bit of financial freedom that I'd never had before. And it meant that I could not only go on ASOS and look at the thing that's on sale, I could go on ASOS and buy the thing I wanted. And usually the thing that I wanted versus the thing that was on sale, because it wasn't selling great, meant about 2 or 3 inches in thigh height. And it went from experimental, you know, half boots to being able to buy the one that came all the way up my thighs or down to my knee. And Georgie is sort of flourishing and coming out and finding their own feet within those parameters of being respectful to the people who guided me to where I am today.
I think that's so beautiful that your journey at least starts with the sort of seeds of this gorgeous, you know, flower that you're going to blossom into is a sort of love note to these that were very sad that they're not longer with us, but their essences, right? Their style, their flamboyance, their, you know, their how well turned out they are. I think that's a really, really beautiful tribute. It's a gorgeous thing.
Thank you. I'm glad you see it that way, because it is a definition of who I'm becoming. Not who I am, but who I am becoming.
Mm. When you're putting together an outfit, do you think, and I feel like I know already because one of the things I'm obsessed with is your hair and makeup, but do you think of hair and makeup as part of the outfit?
You'll be surprised. Yes and no. So in the past, I used to. Hair and makeup was very key to how I presented. And the reason was this. A part of having the people that I had, most of the time when you learn to do makeup as someone who's never picked up any makeup in their life, apart of lip gloss, I've always liked lip gloss. But, you know, you go to the internet and you put these fantastic, amazing, creative people on, and they sort of define who most people are. You know, most people do the same steps as every other Jackie Aina or beauty guru out there. They follow the same steps of putting this here, there and everywhere. And it becomes a definition of who you are. And then as a part of that, you sort of, when I started, you know, I was very heavily influenced by drag. And so the makeup was big and uber colorful, and the lips were big and uber colorful. And they defined part of what will then go with it and what you will wear with it. Now, I think I am finding, I can't believe I'm saying, I'm finding my face within the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Part of finding my face means I'm not trying to masquerade what you're looking at the moment. Unfortunately for the rest of you listening, you can't see me. But it's my face. It's a face that I get up in the morning and I don't have to put 17 layers of anything. I have found a way of putting a little purple eyeshadow stick across my eye just to brighten it a little bit. A little bit of foundation powder and a power puff just to sort of level my skin or unify it. And a little bit of shimmer down the cheekbones just to highlight my cheekbones a little bit. And some gloss. This is my face. This is also the same face I see when I take it all off and I'm going to bed at night, just like anybody else. And I think as part of the journey, makeup and hair is a great way to start to experiment as you experiment with your fashion. But I encourage people to have a face you can do in 10 minutes that is you. That face could just be some mascara and some lip gloss and off you go. But you should be as comfortable in that moment as you would be if you had a makeup artist come around and do you a full glam. You know, because that person is still the same person and all of them need to be comfortable and happy. And I'm just starting to get happy.
So lovely. On this journey and, you know, and your childhood as well, are there any trends or items of clothing that you've tried to pull off, but it's just not happening? You just need to let it go.
Boiler suits.
Really?
So I used to have this obsession with boiler suits. I used to love the idea of sort of looking like I just walked out some mechanics workshop and then I took a belt from the camshaft or something. Yeah, this is me speaking cars and I don't even understand what I'm saying. Or I took a fan belt or whatever. Or I cut some of the belt from inside the car, the seat belt, and I strapped it around my waist just the right kind of way. And then I wore 4-inch red stilettos with it. and just walked. It's always been sort of like something I've always wanted to just do. And even before I was comfortable in the 4-inch red stilettos, I wanted to wear like combat boots or something like that, and just look like I belonged in that outfit. But every time I try... Now, I have a reason why I would blame two things on this. Okay. One, I had not started my journey, so I didn't realize that my hips, which is where men put their waist and put their their trousers at, should not be the place I should be cinching this. So I'd not discovered the joy of cinching something just under the boobs and in that small, which doesn't naturally come with to us as men. You know, it takes a bit of self-discovery to understand, oh, actually the smallest part of your body is just above, under the rib cage, and you can cinch there and make everything look great. And two, buying the wrong piece. I was buying a lot of things like that from the men's section, which meant they put that little gather waist moment down on the hip and it would never look great. Now, if I was to retry that, given that I've had this conversation with you, I might just buy a boiler suit and retry it, but buy it from the women's section.
I think there's a world out there where we will see some 4-inch red stilettos and an incredible boiler suit. I can see that happening.
That I'm working on, and I would tag you in it.
Yeah, I can't wait. What's the item of clothing you've had for the longest time that you still love, or do you have quite a high turnover?
I've had to have quite a high turnover. Imagine being, I don't want to say it this way, yeah, but imagine being 14 and you just started to go to the mall or to the shopping center by yourself with that £10 that your grandma gave you, and you can just buy just about anything you want from Primark. That's where I'm at in my life right now. Everything is new. Now, I need to fight whoever decided to make women's clothes unstandardized in sizing. Because it's a learning curve, you know. And even though I do not ascribe gender to clothing, traditionally, if I want to go buy something, I have to go into the women's section. And it's given me an opportunity to relearn who I am and relearn what my body can do and relearn what's good on me and what's not. So I'm still at that phase where I'm just like, ooh, bring it all on. Let's do this. Yay! It's fantastic. Although now I know mini skirts and skater dresses are my friends.
Well, is that... Do you enjoy shopping then? How is the experience of shopping for you? Is it, do you do a lot online, or do you want to go in, try things on, you know, like, or is it incredibly, I know for some people shopping is that they hate it, or is it a fun leisure sport for you?
Online shopping is a leisure sport for me. So I'll come after doing some crazy tape 3 times, submitted it, got the job, done the job, got the money in my bank account. And then I will sit here on my iPad on ASOS or somewhere, and I would have a whale of a time putting 1,700 things in my basket in like an hour, and then taking 1,600 of them off. But shopping in the stores has become incredibly tricky for me. It used to be quite comfortable, but it's become incredibly tricky for me. So I like charity shopping and thrifting, but you find yourself in a small town like where I live. I'm not going to name them, but you go into the charity shop and they have a sweet, lovely old nan there. And, you know, Bumpy is looking after everybody's stuff, whatever she's doing. And which is great. But the problem is you then go and start scanning the rails in the women's section. And she gives you the dirtiest look that makes you feel like you're some perv from around the way. And it's not a comfortable feeling. And to some extent, even when you go into mainstream stores, Primani and all these places, depending on who's around you, you know, they have their perception of who you are and what you're doing. And if I go and I'm start looking at, say, mini skirts, somehow they look at me like I'm a pervert for looking at that stuff. And it makes I care a little less every day, but still it makes for an uncomfortable experience. So I found that over the last 6 months to a year, I slowly left those spaces and I'm now shopping more online, because from the comfort of my home, I can buy just about whatever I want without having to second guess myself or worry that when I take it to the counter, the person behind the counter is going to very quickly judge me and make a funny face, even though my money is as soft and or is as plastic as the next person. My 20 quid is my 20 quid. It's your 20 quid. Take it. Give me my change and let me take this lovely coat and go home, or skirt and go home. So shopping in person has become quite tricky.
And it also feels like with the rhetoric that we have in the press at the moment, that it's not going to suddenly change either, that it's just, there's sort of a, feels like a fairly concentrated effort to make anyone who isn't exactly conforming to very strict gender rules or conforming to what they were assigned at birth, you know, a hostile place to be. Do you know what's so sad as well that you're saying about a charity shop? I can absolutely see that happening. But, like, I love a charity shop. And I just think about lots of people I know who are... like queer youth in particular, when you're finding yourself, charity shops are amazing because you can go and buy something for 2 quid and then try it, and you know, and like, and oh, and you could just, you know, you can build up your thing and go, no, that, and you can experiment, and it's really low cost. And the fact that we're, the hostile nature of this country at the moment is we're making those, like, a charity shop should be the safest space in the world to just, you know, if people on a stag do can go in there and try, you know, buy an awful shirt for a stag do, feel perfectly comfortable, why can't some, you know, especially when you're countryside as well, I grew up in a rural area, like, to take the joy of experimentation, affordable experimentation away and move it only onto online spaces is so sad.
It is very sad. And it's doing the charities a disservice. Because when I started experimenting and, you know, starting on my journey and finding myself, I used to shoot stuff in my bedroom. And I remember I had 2 experiences. One was fantastic. So not only did I used to do, buy things on charity shops, I used to buy things online from Facebook Market. The great experience was buying something on Facebook Market with this lovely lady. She had lost some weight and she had all these clothes that she couldn't wear or wouldn't wear anymore. And they were all worn once on holiday or something. And I was like, I bought one and then came and bought another thing. Mm-hmm. And then she was like, I've been looking through my wardrobe, finding all the beautiful things. Because I tagged her in something and she saw me in her dress and she loved it. And she would look through her wardrobe and show me things and ask me if I wanted them. And at the time I was just starting out. This was not something I could budget for or even knew what I was doing. I was standing in my bedroom just taking pictures and putting them, and they would get like 100 likes. And I thought... So, but that was such a lovely sense of acceptance from a stranger. And not only did they sort of make me feel comfortable, they made me feel accepted in a manner that was, you know, rare for me.
And celebrated, right?
Yeah. It's just embarking on something that I'd never really done before. But the same, you know, buying on social media thing, and you turn up and you're buying a dress from a seller and they look at you at the door like they want to just kick you for turning up at their door to give them money for a product because you're buying a dress. Again, same experience, but different approach, you know. And then you're never sure what that household is going to do or how that person is going to react. There shouldn't be a reaction because my £5 is a £5 and your 18, size 18 floral number with long sleeves that I could put a good brown belt on and rock it for all I care is the same thing. And I'm just going to switch and take what I want and you get the money that you need. But somehow people feel that it's their place to judge. I've never had anybody refuse to give me something. A combination of what I'm buying slash what I look like slash the color of my skin, given where I'm living, leaves you feeling a little bit unsafe at that person's door. You're on their property and you just feel like, I don't want to do this anymore. So even though I'm conscious of what people have to say about fast fashion, the safest place for me to spend my hard-earned coins right now is for me to go on places like ASOS and buy something. I'm also trying to temper it by buying more indie designers and looking into that. But I am grateful that I am now in a position where I have the money to make stretch. It kicks me away from being in a position where the only option I have is to go to the charity shop and be semi-insulted, or turning up at someone's door to buy something they probably don't mean you any harm, but they still end up causing some degree of harm.
Can I ask what the best thing you've got secondhand thrifting or charity shop is?
Ooh. Oh, there's so many. Okay, I have this blue coat. I would never sell it. It was an interesting online buy from Facebook Market. And at the same time, I bought a jumpsuit. It was my first jumpsuit. Unfortunately, it was too short for me, although I still kept it. But along with it was this beautiful blue coat. I don't know where it's from because for some reason, the person took out the label. It could easily be Giorgio Armani as well as it could be Dior. I do not know. But it has this lovely shape where it's kind of like 20s, mid-50s, and it's sort of capped at the bottom, but it has sort of like puff sleeves, and they're almost three-quarters, but they're not quite three-quarters. And it's just beautiful. I am obsessed with it. It was one of the first coats I ever bought, and the lady was ever so kind. She was coming shopping at my local Asda, which is the biggest Asda in our general area, and I didn't want to go all the way to where she lives, so she said, I will meet you at Asda. And then I turned up, and she looked at me wide-eyed and a little bit surprised that I genuinely was who I was, and I gave her my money, and I giddy-upped and skipped home, and I wore this coat, and I think I will never sell this
coat. Yes, I love it.
It's so pretty. It's so comfortable as well. And it's just one of those pieces where it looks so unique. I'll probably find it, and there's 10,000 of them out there that were made for Giorgio Armani. But it still would not diminish the joy I got from buying that coat.
I absolutely
coat.
Love it. Is there an item of clothing that you put on and you just instantly feel fantastic in?
Okay, so I have this little pleated miniskirt in black. Again, it was one of the first things I ever bought. Like, I think, remember I said, oh, I want to buy a skirt? And my emotional support human was like, just buy one. That's the skirt I bought. It was this little pleated, elasticated waist skirt. Now, it's gone from what my mom would say. It used to be nice. Now, it's just casual. So, I wear it around the house. But I love that skirt. There is something about it that just does it for me. The length of it is just right. So I can put it around my hips, so the natural man waist, and it will still sit above my knees, and I can put it on my true waist, and it will sit like a really like coquettish skirt kind of thing. And I just love it. I can wear it with a hoodie and a crop top and bodysuit, and I just love it. I absolutely love that skirt. It also, it's anything that sits lovely around the waist and flares out. I love something about that shape, that skater shape, where it just sort of allows you to be free whilst and comfortable while still wearing something really cute.
Oh, sounds gorgeous. Is there an era that you wish you existed in just for the fashion?
Okay, there's two, and they're in equal measures. That's why there's two.
Okay.
60s. Just because I wish I was there for those little mini micro dresses and mini skirts being all the novelty and all the age. And I love a mini skirt. So, I wish I was there, like a Twiggy moment, like just something floral and vibrant, but barely covering the things it needs to cover, and there's something kind of, and that white go-go boot, and just wear it. I would still wear it now, and I don't even want to wear it as a nostalgia to the 60s. I would just wear it, you know. That era was fantastic. And then the 80s. Ooh, there's something about the 80s, you know. There's something about that power jacket, that cinch, that little barely there skirt that came out, the vibrant color, the gold buttons, the hat that was sort of there but was about to cover your whole face, and then you turned up at the event and you were wearing black stockings and some black stilettos, and you just look like $1 million. Like, there was something about that era, and actually even more specific in the 80s, the interpretation of black fashion in the 80s, where they took all these fantastic things they saw on the Paris runways and they reinterpreted them with African prints and kente and things like that, where it was still power fashion, but it had a, people were starting to discover their power of thinking of, and thinking of the motherland, you know, the little pillbox hats, but they were, had a stripe of kente around them. And I used to watch A Different World when I was younger, and it was sort of half 80s, half 90s sort of thing on the TV. And you had Dwayne, Cleophas Wayne, and you had all these people, and Denise, who was like really power 90s, but 80s looking. And they all had a sense of grandiose, like everything was sort of chest out, shoulders out. People were unafraid in those moments to just be themselves. And there's something about that 80s fashion that always is like always does the trick for me.
I always think when I see Grace Jones, I think that she always looks so regal. Mm-hmm. Like someone of extreme wealth and power and means is in the room. Like we've just got that, like, well, big dick energy. You know, that thing that rich people have, that like, yeah, a divine right to rule. That's what I think when I see Grace Jones.
Yeah, that's definitely that good vibe. That's, it was a time when, I was born at the right time to be able to see the right things. That's what I always say to myself. Because it was a time when, I know black people had already started to walk in their power, but you saw more black people walk in their power. They strutted hand in hand down the street with everybody in a manner that doesn't mean they were fully equal, but in a manner that allowed them to serve and in a manner that let them be equal. No matter where you were, like I can imagine my mother in the 80s, and they were teenagers and they were starting to do clubbing and stuff. And those things were possible in a manner that would have probably not been possible before, because they had to be careful of who they were and how they were and where they went. But it felt like in the 80s, so many doors were getting smashed. You know, there were more black models on the runway. You know, there were designers that would only use black models on the runway. Things that were unheard of. But in the 80s, you saw them. And even though I was really young then, and I was just an infant, but when I take a step back and I revisit that, there is a power that comes with it that just says, this is the moment where we started to be. Let's just keep running forward.
You talk about being on your journey. Let's talk about your future in fashion. So your style, do you see it evolving, and in which direction?
I see my style evolving because I've never really been one to be stagnant. And if I'm stagnant for too long, I find a reason to change things. I think I'm slowly getting to the point where I'm starting to have I think a lot of the time you have to have a base of who you are. Like at minimum, this is who I am. And I'm getting there where I'm starting to get comfortable. At minimum, I'll paint this face and I know this is who I am. I'll wear this little skater dress and I know it will never fail me. I'm probably putting on some glitter socks and I know it will never fail me. I'm almost there. But with that will come the evolution of my sense of self. And with that will probably come, hopefully, more jobs that allow me to earn more money so I can buy more things. Still within the same style that I am working with today and probably still as chaotic as I am today. But the freedom that comes with a little bit of coin means that I have the freedom to buy more interesting things that I probably would have said, okay, instead of buying this one interesting dress, I'm going to go buy two tops over there. Hopefully, I will find myself in the financial position not to have to make that choice and buy them all.
But that sounds like true freedom, right? Like, I don't want to choose, I'll buy them all.
Thank you, darling. Just give me everything.
Is there an item of clothing you can always see yourself wearing?
A miniskirt. I'll probably wear a miniskirt forever. Here's the thing. In a juxtaposition of self, you know, I have learned to balance what people think and what I see and or who I am. And at the intersection is a miniskirt. At the intersection is a miniskirt where I can wear a hoodie, which can be mask femme, whatever you choose to look at it. That's also one of those neutral things. I can wear just about anything, whether it's something that people see as femme or whether it's something that people see as mask. And I'll compare with the miniskirt, the right miniskirt, and I feel right at home.
I love it. Are there any trends that you're hoping you never see come back?
No, do whatever trend you want. Here's the thing, and here's why I say that. I don't care for trends. I am the trend.
Yes! Fantastic.
Sometimes I put things together. Not everything I put together works. Like the franticness of the nature of what I do. And I go into this state where I just try lots of things. And sometimes even I'll be like, oh, I can't wear that. It's not really on trend. And then I think, oh, that's why you have to wear it. So I will wear it. I will wear it because why not? Trends are nice. They're a nice guide. Now, not everybody is as creative with their fashion as, you know, we are on a scale. These people are trendsetters. There are people who are over here who need a little bit of guidance, and they maybe don't necessarily have that much time to be worrying about whether the white t-shirt is in or out. And then there's everybody else in between, because the people who are over here, for lack of a better term, don't give a fuck. And so they will wear what they want. And the people who are over here also do not give a fuck, and they will wear what they want. And somewhere when these two things collide, that's the trend. So these people are the trends, and everybody else is just kind of like wobbling in the middle, sort of following them or not following them. So I choose not to be following the trend. I choose to hopefully be somewhere here and just be setting the trend. If I wear enough metallic go-go boots that sit under my knee, hopefully everybody else will buy one and wear one.
Fingers crossed. Final question. You've passed on. It's your funeral. I don't know if you're going to be cremated, if you're going to be buried, but what are you wearing for the occasion?
Okay. So I've always had the fear that the day I die, maybe the people that love me don't love me enough and want to put me in something which is traditionally mask, and that gives me like the heebie-jeebies. So I've always imagined sort of a halfway there point. So I'm wearing a skirt. It's a full-length skirt. It has a petticoat underneath it. So it's so big, you can't close that coffin without squishing it in. And it's full length all the way down to my ankles with some nice white socks. But the skirt is black. And I'm wearing a pussy bow blouse in white. Oh. So I want to be buried in monochrome, first of all. Everybody out there, if you love me, please take note. I want to be buried in monochrome, so a nice crisp white pussy bow blouse with the, and they've definitely fluffed this bow and it's huge to one side of me, and then a nice, well-tailored, fitted jacket, something that cinches me at the waist, has a little bit of a peplum moment to sit over the skirt. I want to look like money. Okay. Pick the right wig, let it be like the one I'm wearing today, nice and small and just sitting around my face with the hair not falling down. Use some got to be glue, it might stick to my face. But make sure I look expensive. Okay? That's why I always have my nails done, because they can't do that for you once you pass. If I don't look like money, I'm hunting everybody. And if you make the mistake of not putting me in a skirt, I'm hunting you. I don't care. You have to do the right thing by me.
Triple minor. What a human Georgie is. I love, you know, the phrase, getting the bravery to allow them to stare. God, I want that on a t-shirt. They're just so articulate when it comes to the, I suppose, pain and rejection that can come from holding simultaneous identities and being part of so many marginalised groups. And you know what really struck me? I keep thinking about the conversation about the reality of the hostility of shopping local in small towns or even engaging with a high street, you know, as a trans person, how brutal that can be because of the climate and the rhetoric at the moment in particular. The discomfort that Georgie's subjected to is just heartbreaking. And it makes absolute sense that a safe space is online shopping, it's fast fashion. And what a horrible situation that we've allowed to happen, and, you know, that we've built that prison. Although the story of the woman raiding her wardrobe to share with Georgie, or things like, oh, I think you should have this. The woman on Facebook Marketplace, that is just, I needed to hear that. It was a feel-good story. If you want to see some of the looks that Georgie and I chat about, head to our Instagram. That is at whoyouwearingpod. You can also message us on there, or you can email whoyouwearing@gmail.com. I really hope that we get to share a picture one day of a boiler suit and red heels. That's all I want. Do you know what? We had a really beautiful email this week,
about last week's episode with Siobhan McSweeney. If you haven't listened to that, you can get it. I mean, wherever you got this podcast, really. I really want to share it with you. So Claire emailed and says, "Hi, Kiri. This is the first time I felt inclined to message a podcaster. Normally, just so you know, that comes with a complaint attached. But this is really nice from Claire." She says, "I've just listened to your episode with Siobhan McSweeney. Huge congratulations. It was an amazing conversation. And as a person who has struggled with my weight and self-image, it was so helpful to hear you and Siobhan talk about your experiences. It was genuinely moving. It put into words something I found difficult to define. You spoke afterwards about how much you spoke. I absolutely thought the opposite, unlike a lot of interviewers, mainly comedians. Babes, we've all got a mental list of them. Anyway, unlike a lot of interviewers that I listen to, you allow your guests to speak and don't make it all about you. It's lovely. Anyway, thank you for your work. You mentioned you're having a tough time. I hope that's improving, Claire." I don't know what I mentioned about tough time, whether it was in the podcast itself or whether it's about what's going on with me at the moment. But thank you very much. Do you know what? This podcast is actually one of those little havens where I get to listen to the episodes back and I get all the, like, because I get nourished when I'm having the conversations. But then when I listen to them back, you know, there's just different parts of that speak to you in different parts of your life. And I feel like it's an honour to listen back to them. Oh my God, I feel like I'm coming on my period. I'm being so profound. But Claire, thank you so much for that beautiful email. I so love that people are finding the podcast and getting something from it, because I just always wanted to do something like this and it is my passion project. And thank God I have an amazing producer in Joe and the team in Little Wonder that are willing to, I mean, bankroll this vanity project, quite frankly. But I'm really glad you guys are finding it. I would love it if you could recommend it to people. Maybe give it a nice review or subscribe. All that stuff helps people find us. And I just want as many people listening to these chats, because I know some of them are just life-changing for people and exactly what they need to hear. So, thank you, Claire. Now, each week, I talk about a small business that I love, that the guest has sort of inspired me to champion and talk about. I think, oh, that company would fit really well with them. Also, I just want to hammer home, ahead of Christmas, we have to support our small businesses. They make things that are made to last. Is a real human at the end of an order who is delighted to receive it. Amazon doesn't need your money. The woman juggling businesses and childcare and sustainability, they do. Let's remember, let's have their backs this Christmas. We need them. We can't let them disappear. So this week, Georgie got me thinking about skirts and bold prints and those gorgeous African wax prints. And there is somewhere at the top of my list for all that. It's Kemi Telford. Now, it's all founded by Yvonne, who was raised in Nigeria, moved over to England, and it's all run from South London. So Kemi Telford make the most stunning statement pieces. The business started after Yvonne was inundated with folk asking her, "Where did you get your outfit from?" Like lots of people from Nigeria, they were all made for her and one-offs. So she was like, there's a business in this. She made two wax print skirts, and that's how Kemi Telford was born. The clothing is made in small batches. They work with ethical and sustainable manufacturers. All the manufacturers are checked by the team in person. The people making the garments are paid over the living wage in whichever country they're living in. And remnants from the garments are used to make hair accessories. The pieces are so beautifully made, and they're made with really great quality to ensure that they last. And that is the most sustainable something can be, that it lasts forever. And I love this detail. Yvonne, who owns the company, personally quality checks every item before it is sent out. Oh, and her daughters and her husband do all the packing. Love a family business, because you don't have to pay them. Maybe that's just me speaking as a farmer's daughter. Oh, all the packaging as well is, it's either biodegradable or recyclable. Even the website is carbon neutral. So please take a look at Kemi Telford. They do the most beautiful, like, the dresses are amazing, the skirts are just fantastic and comfortable, and you can just feel the difference of the quality. Follow them everywhere on social media. It's Kemi, spelled K-E-M-I, and then Telford, like the little town in England, T-E-L-F-O-R-D. I'm going to see you next week with a brand new episode where I chat to a wonderful woman and an actual ray of sunshine. Always cheers me up. I'll be chatting to Giovanna Fletcher. See you then.
is produced by Joe Southard, the artwork is by Mary Phillips, and the music is by Annie Glass. This has been a Little Wonder production.